Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Before we begin here today, change is coming. ID the Future is transitioning to a new podcasting platform. Now, this is behind the scenes, so if you subscribe to ID the Future through Apple, Google, or Spotify, your subscription should transfer automatically. If, however, for any reason you don't see subsequent episodes appearing in your podcast player on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, head on over to idthefuture.com to get reconnected. That's idthefuture.com.
Welcome to ID the Future. I'm your host today, Mike Keyes. Today we're going to be talking about scientific racism. And I have the privilege of having a conversation about this with my colleague, Dr. Richard Weikert, who is Emeritus Professor of History at California State University, Stanislaus. Welcome, Richard.
Hi, it's great to be with you.
So recently we've seen an upsurge in interest in ripping down monuments, renaming institutions that have anything to do with racism. And of course, you and I and most of us think that racism is appalling. But today we'll be talking about scientific racism, its history, and eventually we'll get to connecting this with today. Now, among the targets of potential monument teardowns are not just racists that had no ostensibly scientific credentials, but some that did at least look scientific. What would be some target monuments, Richard, that you've heard of recently that some have wished to tear down that are part of our story today?
Well, of course, probably many of you have heard that Margaret Sanger has come under fire, has founded Planned Parenthood, and Planned Parenthood has sort of been reevaluating her legacy in relation to racism because she was intensely racist. Frances Galton is another person that's come under fire. University College London, if I recall correctly, has a Galton Laboratory or something like that, that they were going to decide that they were going to rename. Frances Galton was the founder of the eugenics movement, which was a movement to try to improve human heredity. And he was the cousin, actually, of Charles Darwin. And he was also an intense racist. He actually did some explorations in Africa himself and had utter disdain for the people that he saw there, the Black Africans. And then Charles Darwin himself was intensely racist. And this is something that a lot of people recognize and historians will admit, but often they sort of downplay it. Well, he was just sort of going along with the racism of his own day and such, but they don't really grapple with the way that he integrated into his scientific theory because he did consider it scientific.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, this rage against some of these icons from the past. Obviously, you and I are against racism, but when it comes to trying to erase history, shouldn't we preserve both the good guys and the bad guys so that we can learn something from history?
Yeah, I would hope we would try to learn something from history. Now, the question, though, I think that a lot of people are grappling with, and it's a tough question, I think, too, is how do you commemorate these things? How do you remember that history? And are you honoring them when you name something after, you know, this particular person? Are you honoring them for that? But I think that the key question, and this is where I have a lot of problems with the way that's being done among the progressive left and such, is that they ignore the fact that we're all a mix of good and bad. You know, that we can honor people for the good things they did, but we don't have to honor them for the bad things they did. So there are some people in the past that we could honor for the wonderful things that they promoted and accomplished while recognizing that maybe they weren't a good person in every way, but we need to tell the whole story about it.
Yeah. And the story has been told many really interesting, wonderful ways by you, Richard, and several of your books, From Darwin to Hitler, published in 2004, and then I skip over a couple of books to more recent one that is actually very, very accessible, kind of the entry level in terms of your books, The Death of Humanity, published in 2016, which also deals with contemporary issues. But today's topic is scientific racism, its history and its continuing influence. One more sort of contemporary tie-in. My wife and I recently saw the movie Life is Beautiful, which is my favorite World War II movie. And there's a brilliant, witty cinematic critique of racism in this. It's an Italian film. All you get is English subtitles. But anyway, I would recommend to our listeners to watch that film sometime after you've listened to today's podcast. So, scientific racism, what is that? What's the whole, scientific racism? How could that be?
Yeah, well, of course, we need to be careful here. Historically, we don't want to jump to the wrong conclusion that science created racism or something like that, which some people have accused us of promoting. We don't promote that idea. Racism and ethnocentrism of various sorts have been around since time immemorial, since people have had the ability to be proud of their own group and try to have negativity toward the out group. So it's not a brand new thing. But what happened in the 18th century with the Enlightenment was that people began trying to collect, identify, categorize things. There was a scientific thrust in biology of trying to, you know, trying to categorize things. And part of that was to categorize humans. And so beginning in the 18th century with the Enlightenment, some people, scientists, biologists, medical personnel, professors and such, began trying to sort through, identify, and figure out, you know, how to identify humans. And they integrated a lot of the racism that was already around into their ideas by looking at particular peoples who they saw as uncivilized and considering them lower biologically. Now, simultaneously, in the 18th century, people began embracing a more materialistic outlook philosophically. And that was going to have big ramifications too, because if you're a materialist, you know, you only have two options for how human behavior comes about, or some combination of these two. That is, it's either biologically determined, so it comes from your heredity, from your biological makeup, or it's environmentally determined. So it comes from your education, your upbringing, and such.
So nature or nurture, right?
Right, exactly. And by the way, that's a phrase that Francis Galton, the leader of eugenics who we mentioned earlier, he actually coined that term, nature versus nurture. Now, of course, as Christians, I believe there's another alternative. It's not nature versus nurture. There are other alternatives to that. There is free will, for example. Nature versus nurture denies any kind of ability of people to have any personality or make independent decisions.
That's kind of parallel to chance, necessity, or design.
Right.
Or design being the third option that's often left out. Anyway, go on with racism.
Yeah, exactly. It's a great point. So as people became more materialistic in their outlook, they did deny the free will. So they were left with biology or environment. And there was sort of a mix of people who chose one or the other, and most people it was a combination of some sort, but usually people tended to gravitate toward one or the other. As we move into the 19th century, a lot of, especially in the early part of the 19th century, there were a lot of them who were embracing environmental. But by the late 19th century, especially as Darwin was coming on the scene, many scientists were embracing biological determinism, that human behavior was shaped largely by biology. And that was going to have some pretty huge impacts on notions about race, because they thought then that different races who were uncivilized, that they were uncivilized because they had inferior biological traits. It wasn't because of their education, or you couldn't educate them out of it, in other words. There were a lot of people, British missionaries and such, who thought that they could take education to these African natives and educate them out of what they saw as their ignorance and uncivilized ways and such. But biological determinists said no. It's built into their biology. They are inferior intellectually and such. And so that was going to be integrated into racism. That was going to make racism even more intense in the late 19th century than it had been earlier. So yeah, there had been plenty of racism around before that time. And some of it was pretty brutal in terms of exploitation. Certainly American race-based slavery was brutal in many ways. But the scientific racism was going to provide a rationale and a justification for that, for slavery and other kinds of oppression of peoples of other races. And that it also created this hierarchy where certain people are biologically inferior, not just because of their upbringing or the way that they were raised or whatever.
So as you think about this introductory piece where you're laying the groundwork, you know, sort of the roots of racism and scientific racism, and you mentioned biological determinism as one component of that and how it fed racism, Darwin enters the picture. Now, what did he bring to the table that wasn't there already, or what did he accentuate that was, you know, already being done? How does he fit into this?
Yeah, well, Darwin, of course, was going to be coming into the scene at the time that Britain was a dominant force in world affairs and was going to be colonizing the world toward the latter part. I shouldn't say colonizing the world at that point. They'd already colonized parts of the world, in North America and such, but they were going to be colonizing even more parts of the world, Africa and parts of Asia and such, in the course of the 19th century. And Darwin was living during this time. And in fact, he was on a voyage of the HMS Beagle in the early 1830s that was mapping the world. And he saw firsthand a lot of the way that the Europeans were colonizing. So this imperialism was something that Darwin was seeing firsthand. And he was noticing, as most European contemporaries did, that the Europeans were winning militarily against the native populations in these various parts of the world. So in Australia, in New Zealand, in other parts of the South Pacific, in South America, the Spaniards and the Portuguese. Darwin actually witnessed firsthand some of the racial conflict that was going on. And he saw that the Europeans were displacing these peoples. And in fact, in The Descent of Man in 1871, he said, quote, "At some future period, not very distant as measured by centuries, the civilized races of man will almost certainly exterminate and replace throughout the world the savage races." And so he provided a justification for this racial extermination, and he uses this term extermination or exterminate in his writing. So he provided a justification for the extermination by claiming that it's a good thing. And the reason it's a good thing, according to Darwin, is because it gets rid of the so-called inferior races and allows the so-called superior races to propagate the species and to move it to a higher level. So he provides an evolutionary explanation for racism and racial conflict, and thus sees it as ultimately a good thing because it advances evolution.
Wow. So this is an aside to Darwin that we don't typically hear today, particularly when it comes to the textbook version of the history of science that you get in science textbooks or even in history books that include scientific history. You normally don't hear of Darwin as being a perpetrator of the fundamental components of racism. So I'm so glad that you've published a series of books to help make this fact about history more accessible. And we're going to have another conversation, Richard, in our next podcast that will get into more of the impact that Darwinian racism had on scientists in the 19th and 20th centuries. So thanks for joining us today, Richard, and we'll have you back soon.
Okay, it's great being with you.
This is Mike Keyes with ID the Future. Thank you for joining us.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.